This is Joseph Coco. I'm at Ape 2017 on behalf of Becca Hilburn's Art Process blog and YouTube channel. If you could introduce yourself, please.
Sure. My name is Glenn Song. I'm the creator of the comic This Mortal Coil, and I also worked in the games industry.
Okay, cool. So what about Ape particularly stood out to you? Is this your first time coming here?
It's not my first time coming to Ape. I was an Ape. I had a table in Ape with a bunch of friends in 2010.
Okay, and that's when it was in San Francisco?
That's when it was up in San Francisco.
Okay.
And I'm tabling. This is the first year I'm tabling with my stuff, my comic, my artwork. So
okay.
That's the big difference between then and now. I guess the other big difference is the size of Ape.
You mean the size of the show?
The size of the show, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely downgraded a bit since it's come to San Jose.
Yeah.
So can you speak a little bit about what the show was like when it was in San Francisco?
There was a lot more people when it was in San Francisco.
Yeah. Was it the same demographic, do you think, though? Like, I know one of the reasons one of the reasons why San Francisco got more traffic is because it was starting to adopt more pop culture sort of things and a little bit less comics.
Yeah.
So do you think it was the same people coming? Maybe not the exact same people, the same type of people coming.
The way I understood, like, Ape in 2010 is that it was owned by the San Diego Comic-Con folks.
Yeah.
And I guess, like, people who do that convention, or I think it was, like, free if you had a pass to SDCC or something. And so
cool.
I'm guessing people from that just spilled over.
Yeah.
Plus it's in the city, and San Francisco is a lot bigger and more busy. And
of course.
I know they had, like, dealers. They had even panels and stuff, even though I didn't go to them. They were, like... I don't want to say, like, big name.
There's panels here, but yeah, we went in 2015, I believe, in San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
The last year they had it there. I don't know if that was 14 or 15, but yeah, there was some big name people, I think, doing panels at that time.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I heard it changed ownership, and then it came here, and then like last year it was bigger, this year it's smaller. So
sure.
I don't know what's going on with them, but
yeah, that's fine.
But it's nice to be back at Ape. In any case,
definitely indie comic cons, there's not enough, and they all seem to congregate in big cities. San Jose is smaller than San Francisco, I assume, so
yeah,
it's good to see that even smaller cities can support independent comic cons.
Mm-hmm.
But can you tell me a little bit about your work?
Yeah, sure. My work is mainly this webcomic in print, that's in print form. It's called This Mortal Coil.
Okay.
And it's about a kind of young startup Shinto deity who helps humans who get involved with monsters, demons, and other gods from the eternal realm. So that's like the big overarching story. This is one episode of This Mortal Coil.
Okay.
So this book itself is a complete story. It's called The Rabbit and the Moon, in which the Lady of the Moon, Chang'e, who comes from Chinese mythology, she is... she's an immortal, first of all, but she gets attacked by this wolf demon. It's all explained kind of in the backstory, but she gets attacked,
okay,
and Kamiko comes to her rescue to try and save her and stop this wolf demon from trying to regain his immortality.
All right, and can you tell me about some of the inspirations behind the world and the story itself?
Sure. Some of the inspirations, like when I first came up with the idea, is like a combination of things like Death Note, so very anime, pop culture, heavily influenced. Some Western comics, like Sandman. If you go to the website, there's one comic that was kind of references Sandman. And also, just like Japanese, like fashion was another thing.
Interesting.
So Kamiko is dressed as a Lolita. If you look at this coloring book, this was like a way to kind of expand on that idea. Like, I had done a version of her for this comic, which I thought, you know, didn't quite fit that aesthetic, and I wanted to explore it more. So I started doing these concept sketches in this coloring book.
Okay.
Really, they were meant to just be like different studies, like looking at actual designs.
Yeah.
Some of them are ones I created. Some of them are outfits I found online.
The line looks beautiful.
Thank you. And it was basically just a way to kind of explore what her character would look like with different outfits and how I could present the fashion going forward as part of the her character and the story.
Yeah, that's really cool. I feel like outside of the realm of alternate history comics and history comics, people don't explore outfit design often enough.
Right.
I know it's something Becca spends a lot of time on. She puts up Pinterest boards trying to get inspiration for what her characters would look like.
I do a lot of that too. I look at Pinterest for, because I don't think of myself as a fashionable guy, but that doesn't mean my webcomic character shouldn't be fashionable.
Sure.
So I look at Pinterest for a lot of inspiration for this.
Gives a lot of life to your characters.
Yeah. Like, I want to give them their own identity and their own life. And this is a way of doing it. And as these pictures grew, they got more and more complicated because they started telling, they weren't just outfit designs. Some were like, they started telling stories. Like this one, that's like, she has a gun. It's like, where did she get it? As it goes on, it gets kind of weirder and weirder. But I feel like that's comes also part and parcel with my webcomic world. As I developed this, I was also developing my ideas for it.
That's cool. So this was happening.
This was mostly
you were making all these sketches. Did you intend for them to be a coloring book, or was it just you exploring the idea of your
originally
characters?
They were meant to be just like an exploration, just concept art really. And what I had done was I had turned into this 360 turntable. My friend looked at it and said, like, you know what, just make a nice coloring book. And so I thought, well, I'll give my hand at self-publishing one. And so I used CreateSpace and some freeware tools and basically put this book together.
Nice. And how do you feel the audiences at APE are responding to coloring books? Do you think people are walking around looking for that, or are they mainly focused on comics?
Mainly focused on comics, based on the sales. I've had more sales of the comic. I sold one or two coloring books.
Okay.
These books you can actually get on Amazon. And they sold fairly well, I would say, for, you know, me just putting it together and putting it out there. Like, there are things, it's not perfect.
Is it other comics people? I don't know how much information Amazon has given you through CreateSpace, or is it like...
To be honest, like, no information, really.
Okay.
I don't know what the demographic is. I assume the people who buy this are interested because they want to find adult coloring books.
Yeah,
that
makes sense.
There's not many
dresses or something that there aren't a whole lot of rules to coloring, maybe. So
right, exactly. There's a huge market of like adult coloring book folks out there. If you go on Facebook and stuff, you can find a lot of stuff about making coloring books and people who get adult coloring books for I think mostly like stress relief or dealing with like, you know, various therapy or physical therapy, cancer,
distract them from life, basically.
Basically,
yeah. What a lot of people our age, I think, use video games for.
Exactly. Yeah. It definitely, like, when you look online at coloring book groups, you'll find the demographic skews older. So I think it's hitting a different demographic in that sense. I don't think it's been like the response here hasn't been too overwhelming for coloring books. Because I think it's still mostly about comic books. But
sure.
I brought it here to see what the response would be.
Yeah, and I mean, you've got half a table, so there's plenty of room for your prints and your comics and coloring books.
Yeah, exactly.
So you mentioned to me when we were talking earlier that you have a computer science background.
Yeah.
Did you go into computer science looking to develop video games, or did you go into computer science more as just a love for computer science?
Mostly to develop video games.
Okay. Yeah, like, I mean, that's kind of why I got into it as well.
It's kind of like your typical, I guess, I'm not from Silicon Valley, but kind of like your typical story of a, like, I got into programming when I was a kid. I learned how to code.
Yeah.
Pascal, C, C++, Basic.
Yeah. Which is
not
what was
in that
available
order
at that time.
Right. Not in that order. I eventually learned C++ because that is the language games speak. That's the one that's closest to the metal.
Yeah.
And I made game prototypes and stuff at home. I don't want to say prototypes, but I made small little parts of games.
Sure.
And then I got into CS. I went to USC. I got my undergrad and my master's degree in like computer graphics. And I got an internship at Electronic Arts that way.
Nice.
And
were you pursuing art the whole time that you were doing that?
As a hobby.
Maybe not, yeah, as professionally,
yeah,
but
not
just drawing when,
yeah, not
when you have free time?
Right.
Okay, that's interesting, because, I mean, I imagine a lot of independent game developers have that sort of background, but I haven't talked to too many people who manage to both keep up their art chops while diving deep into software development.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely like if you get deep into, like, there's so much stuff you can do with software. Like, you could build your own engine, you could, you know, you could build a whole application, you could do websites. It's something I feel like once you get sucked into, like, it, you could spend hours, weeks at a time just coding something. And, but yeah, I'm kind of, I don't know, cut my time between both. I don't know, it's just how I am, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's great for the video game world, especially when you have teams of two or three people.
Right, yeah, I find most of those people, like, indie developers, you kind of have to have multiple skills. Like, having an art skill, coding skill is a useful thing because your team is small. And,
yeah.
You know, it is, in a way, your artistic, creative expression.
Sure.
In its entirety, your code and your game, your artwork, your music, whatever you're trying to imbue your game with.
Yeah. So you had mentioned that you're still doing game development sort of stuff. What are you working on right now?
I'm currently working in Los Angeles at a company called Nix Hydra, and we make a visual novel game called called The Arcana, and I'm an engineer there. Something that I've been working on since 2014 as a kind of sister website to This Mortal Coil is this thing called The Shrine, which is also, I call it a virtual place. It's kind of like, well, like a virtual park / Shinto shrine.
Nice.
And it's an offshoot of This Mortal Coil. Like, it's another branch of it. In that world, well, it's still part of the Mortal Coil universe, but Kamiko is the land deity of that shrine. And you can visit there during any time of the day, and different characters show up during the day and during the night. You know, there are things that you can do at kind of like a real Shinto shrine, such as like draw Emma cards, write your wishes, and basically kind of like send them to the gods or send them into the ether, basically. And
cool.
Since she's a modern deity, she, of course, she has a Twitter account and she tweets those images out.
So I did want to ask you, this was professionally printed or self? Oh,
that's
sorry,
self-published.
Self-published. And did you also go through CreateSpace for this?
Originally, I did a prototype in CreateSpace, but CreateSpace is mainly for publishing print word novels. And they're really good at doing that. They're decent at doing coloring books, but the paper's not quite the right quality. Doing comic books, CreateSpace isn't so great. They have a problem with registering the CYMK. So the version I printed with them, there was a lot of ghosting. This is all done. This is done with Kablam. You can see they've done a very beautiful job. They had some issue with, I think they called this a binding issue.
Kablam does digital printing and offset printing, or just digital?
They're like a print on demand, so I want to say they do digital.
So digital printing. Yeah, because I was curious. I saw that you had spot color, and unfortunately for digital printing, that's just, they're just going to charge you a full color rate for that,
basically,
right?
Like, when I looked at it, it's like I had to do full color because it's like there are splashes of color here and there. Some pages do have a lot of color.
Yeah, and that's something that you planned from the start, or
something
you were
just from the start.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
I mean, I love the heavy blacks that you have in your work.
Yeah, actually, one of the, aside from the story, one of the other things I came up with, it's like, if I were going to do this as a comic, I wanted to do it in this high contrast black and white style.
Sure. And it's like so drastically different than a lot of what Lolita stuff does, so it's cool to see.
Yeah, it's very different.
Lolita dresses rendered with heavy black styles, and particularly women rendered with heavy black styles, because a lot of work like that has very male-focused cast.
It's very noirish, and I've had a lot of friends tell me like it has that very kind of detective noir look. I mean, Sin City is, I think, the obvious example of this high contrast style with like splashes of color, which is kind of where I stole it from.
I
really like
borrowed.
It.
Yeah, sure. So, did you always intend to release a print form of the comic? You introduced it as a webcomic.
I introduced it as a webcomic. I did design all the pages as if I were one day going to print it. So,
when I started, it was definitely a possibility from the start.
When I started the project from day one, I was like, I want to make sure I can do the full breadth of what I can with this work. So, digital, print, and, you know, art prints and so on.
Okay. And what was the inspiration for, I'm sorry, you said it was called The Shrine?
The Shrine, yeah.
Yeah. Like, how did you, did you just wanted to explore more in the world, or it's something like you thought it would reach a different audience and bring more attention to the comic?
Yeah, so it's a little bit of both those things. One was, okay. As I would produce a comic, I realized doing a graphic novel like this on the side would take 4 to 5 years or something.
Sure.
And I was like, well, I would like another way to tell a story. And
yeah.
I thought visual novel might be a nice compromise. Plus, I would get to use my engineering skills and do something more with the characters and something different.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, it's a good idea, but it's not that easy because there's a lot of assets and things to create.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wanted to explore, and I think of it less of a game and more of just like a piece of art, like an interactive piece of art that's on the web. You can go there, it looks like a picture, and it changes over the course of the day. If characters show up, you can poke at them and they'll talk to you and you can interact with them. There are some things you can do that are similar to what you could do at a real Shinto shrine.
Yeah.
And excuse me. I basically have like this, what I would say, an alpha milestone framework of what, it's like a vertical slice of what it can do.
Yeah.
And then now the next step is to kind of expand it and build it into something more.
Yeah. More game-like?
Maybe.
More...
Like, I'm exploring that because it's like, it's goofy. Like, part of it was like, it's another way to advertise it. It's another way of, another entry point into the world of this Mortal Coil. Like,
yeah.
You find the shrine, maybe you
building
find the
comics. Your franchise, basically.
Basically. And then, I forgot my train of thought, but yes.
Sure. So how is your process different for building a visual novel versus building a graphic novel? Do you work sequentially, I guess, first of all, for the Mortal Coil?
Yeah, with The Rabbit and the Moon, I actually scripted it all first, and I did several revisions, and then storyboards.
Okay.
And then, you know, kind of like in a step-by-step process.
Sure,
you would hand it off to 5 different people, but when it's just you, it's like you just kind of pipeline and just do it one step at a time.
Yeah. Well, I've talked to a few people who do tend to work more loosely. I guess a canonical example would be... I'm not going to be able to think of the name. sorry about that.
With the second... I have a second... it's more of a Four Coma style web comic of this Mortal Coil on the site now called The Lady of the Moon, which is actually kind of a follow-up to this one.
Okay.
And it's done first in 4 panels, but a little more chibi, a little more loose. Like, I didn't come to it with a final script.
Yeah.
One thing I thought of as I was working on this giant graphic novel is that after a couple of years, like, the voice of the character
lose
changes.
A little steam.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
I don't think it was
so
a little steam.
Are you kind of second-guessing decisions you made, like, a couple of years ago?
I don't think it's second-guessing decisions as much. Well, okay, yes, there is part of that. And that's where you start cutting chapters and things. Like, when I saw the full scale of the production of what I'd have to do and counted out basically the number of hours based on the pages that had to be, yet to be done,
yeah.
It was like, okay, some of this needs to get cut if I want to be able just to finish it and ship a final product and be done with it.
Cool. So, yeah, that actually sounds a lot like how game designers will plan things out, just with an Excel spreadsheet saying, well, I know these assets will take this long.
This is like the hardcore kind of production project management kind of side.
Yeah. So it's interesting that you're approaching your own comic like that. I mean,
I think it's good because you should be focused
on producing something in the long run.
Right, because otherwise you
don't have to suck all your creativity out just to do that. You just need to be realistic about what you
can actually
accomplish.
I think it also helps creatively because when I looked at what was left, it's like, there are parts I can condense. There are parts that seem completely unnecessary.
Sure.
And I can chop it out. And I feel like in the end, it helped make the story better. And
awesome.
Of course, it cut a year's worth of production out of it, which then allowed me to go explore new ideas for this Mortal Coil.
Okay.
And not just continue to keep drawing the same thing. And then getting back to what I was saying about, it wasn't that the story was getting stale, it was that my concept of the character in the world was evolving. Like, it evolved over those 4 years. And this is like a representation of what it was 4 or 5 years ago. And now I'm starting to move on. And it wasn't, I guess you could say it wasn't as fresh. And I wanted to be a little more improvisational. So when I did The Lady of the Moon as a 4-panel, or a series of 4 panels, I started, like I started with a core concept, and then from there I just just kind of improvised story, like, you know, comic strips from that, and I built kind of a story arc and I ended it somewhere.
Okay.
It's not as perfectly put together as The Rabbit in the Moon, but, you know, it was an experiment, and I feel like the next comic I want to do is somewhere in between the way that a big graphic novel is done, because I like that look.
Okay.
And something that's more four panel like, because that's something that it, you know, responds, I think, better on the internet.
Yeah, because people want to consume things in bite-sized chunks, basically.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, when you see what most of the comics that seem to gather lots of traction, it's a lot more gag-like. It's four panels.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little simpler looking. And plus, also, it cuts the production time down by a quarter. Like, it's 20 hours for a page of this comic versus, say, 5 or 6 hours for a four-panel comic.
Wow. So, are you working traditionally or digitally?
Everything's done digitally using ClipPaint Studio.
Okay, nice. Yeah, that would probably be why you have such smooth lines in there, because everything's vector-based.
Actually, it's not vector-based.
Oh, okay.
It's all done in raster, like at 600 DPI.
Okay.
The nice thing is I can turn it into vector-based, like using Inkscape. I can take the original art and put it in there, and actually it traces fairly well.
Nice.
From bitmap to vector.
Yeah, so if you wanted to produce like a giant banner or something, it'd be
trivial. Some of those prints are actually done that way. I think that one of Kamiko with the speech bubble, the purple and blue one, that one was done by blowing up an image and after turning into a vector. Cool.
And I'd ask how your process was different between your graphic novel and producing something like The Shrine. Did you plan out everything for The Shrine beforehand? I mean, I know you said it's not quite finished, it's just a vertical slice.
The thing with like Game Development, like there's, like I planned as much as I could, but things change as things change with video games as you make them as well.
You have some idea and you realize how difficult it will be to implement, right. So you just end up cutting that, basically.
Sometimes you sit there and you think, like, how many assets will I need? How many hours will it take to produce those assets? What kind of code will I need? What's actually feasible within a certain time frame? And
how reusable will this be?
Right. Or how, like, even how useful it will be. Like, will it really, you know, help the bottom line of this thing?
Okay.
Or say whatever it's trying to say. And so there are things that I did to make the vertical slice work. And then there's kind of like secondary things that I'm basically holding off till later. It's like if I could build traction for it, or if I started a Patreon for it or something, and there was some way of getting it funded, then I would just definitely continue to build more and more features into it. But I don't want to, like, I don't want to overload with lots of feature creep. I just want the core of what it is.
I understand. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So that you're not distracting people from the final product that you want to produce.
Or as they say in Silicon Valley, it's a minimum viable product.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is what matters, like getting it done, getting it out there, and then sharing it with people and seeing what the response is to it.
Would you have any advice to an artist who's wanting to get into game development but doesn't have any coding skills necessarily?
I feel like my...
Probably more towards the visual novel sort of side rather than... Or maybe producing assets for other independent games, but...
I definitely feel partnering with somebody. Like, if you're doing an independent, like, game, I feel like it helps to have somebody else. And it nothing really to do with, like, definitely skill. Like, if you partner with an engineer, that's helpful, because then he can do the engineering work, and while if you're an artist, you can do the artwork. But also because I think someone who works alone tends to spin their wheels a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I have friends down south, like, they're working on stuff, and... They just kind of, they've been working on them for years without end. And really, it's like, I feel like for a project, you have to have an end somewhere so you can move on to the next thing, or move on even to the next milestone of your project.
Sure.
So it helps to have somebody there so...
To keep you sane, basically.
To keep you sane, basically. To tell you, like, if what you're doing is, like, you're getting too much into the weeds, or you're getting too crazy with one small aspect, when it maybe it doesn't matter to the bigger picture of what you're making.
Okay, so basically just start trying to find communities of independent game developers and find someone who has a complementary skill set to you.
Yeah, someone with a complementary skill set helps. Someone who can keep you from spinning your wheels definitely helps. And yeah, even networking beyond that and finding other indies, I think is useful, because you don't know what kind of connections you can make out there.
Sure. Okay, and would you have any advice to someone who's considering tabling at 8 for the first time?
Definitely. There's like things I feel like that definitely have to get done, like your Board of Equalization paperwork.
Okay.
I don't know.
Because
I didn't,
California conventions can be a little complicated.
Right. And also not creating a ton of merch. Like, I mostly just wanted to come here to sell this book. And
okay.
I had this, so that I brought that.
Of course.
These tchotchkes I created as just to explore, to see like
different price points.
Different price points to see what would be popular, what people would pick up. Same with the art prints. So
yeah, I mean, if nothing else, art prints act like signs for your work. So
right.
As long as it's not just fan art, like it can definitely be helpful.
Right, exactly. But yeah, I came here mainly to sell this book.
Okay, so just focus on having one polished product before you attend to show
don't overload yourself with lots of little other things. Like I would get whatever the core thing you want to do and put that as your main product and sell that.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for talking to me.
Yeah,
I hope you have a good ape.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks for listening to Up and Conning Artist. A video version is available on the Natasoup YouTube channel, along with some convention recaps. And if you wouldn't mind, please consider supporting Becky Hilburn by contributing to her Patreon or checking out her Tiny People comic at 7inchkara.com and wherever books are sold.